Okay. Everybody can hear me, I presume? Thank you for having me present here today. I must say I feel a little bit of trepidation and nervousness being an out-of-towner here talking to a group of Texans about Texas law and sort of comparing it to California and the rest of the country, so hopefully I don't embarrass myself too much. A couple of years ago, before I started this enterprise, I was a defense attorney, and a file came across my desk. It was a maritime claim. Turns out a pirate was seeking workers' compensation benefits after retiring. So he had a wooden leg, a hook on his right hand, and a patch over his right eye. A claims adjuster did a three-point contact and asked the pirate, "You know, we have to make sure everything's industrially related here, so what happened to your leg?" He says, "Arr, I was working on the deck, a boom swung over, knocked me overboard, and a shark came up and bit me leg off." Claims adjuster said, "Well, that certainly sounds industrial. What about your hand there?" He says, "Arr, I was working on the deck on the winches, and my hand went in there, lost my hand, they put the hook on it." Claims adjuster said, "Well, that's certainly industrial. I can understand that. Now, what about your eye?" He says, "I was sunning myself on the deck, and a seagull passed over and dropped his duty in my right eye." And the claims adjuster, "Well, I don't understand. That certainly doesn't sound industrial to me." He says, "'Twas the day after he got me hook." All right, so glad that this little thing works. Here's what I'm going to do today. One of the unique things about what I do now is I get to see sort of a national perspective on workers' compensation. One thing that we get caught up in each state is we tend to think of workers' compensation as a state-by-state issue, and to a large extent it is, because obviously procedures change in every state. But all states endure the same kind of problems, face the same kind of issues over time. And to a large extent, there are factors that are outside of each state's workers' compensation system that tend to affect the states very critically. So what I'm going to do is, even though I have, it says up there, how did we get here, it's going to be a little bit different than, you know, rising medical costs and out-of-control chiropractic fees and attorneys litigating, etc. I'm going to give you a little bit of perspective of what various states are doing in response, in particular California, since that's where I'm from. I know California very well. And then how does Texas compare, and hopefully give you a little bit of prognostication as to what's in the future from a national perspective, what to keep a lookout for as we move along. Okay. Workers' compensation, believe it or not, really was a national crisis in the mid-90s going into 2000. You had a terrible erosion of capital on a national basis in the workers' compensation system. The Unicover debacle, has anybody heard of the Unicover partners and all of that mess that created? Unicover was started by a broker who saw an opportunity to gain a very large brokerage fee to the tune of a couple $100 million by marketing some reinsurance programs to primary carriers. The program was oversold with ridiculously low strike points to the primary carriers. The reinsurers who underwrote that program thought that they were purchasing just the medical component of workers' compensation claims, but when they finally came through to review the entire treaties and claims started coming in, they realized that now they had a little bit more than just the medical component of the workers' compensation claims. They ended up buying entire claims at ridiculously low strike points. They sought to get out of the system. A case actually went to the New York Supreme Court, which is the lower level of the New York litigation system, because the treaties had arbitration clauses. The primary carriers in that case attempted to get out of the arbitration clause. They wanted to sue for damages, etc. The New York court upheld the arbitration clause in the reinsurance treaty, so the whole matter went offshore to Bermuda, where it got arbitrated and out of the public eye. Needless to say, that whole debacle had Alice Schroeder, who is a journalist for Forbes magazine, call it the single largest and most devastating insurance scam in the nation ever. It erased between $2 and $3 billion of capital out of the system. What was the magic about the unit cover, though, was that the primary carriers felt that they had a magical deal. It freed up literally billions of dollars off of their reserve books that they could put into investments. Just so happens, concurrently, while the carriers were freeing up money off of the reserve books and putting it into their investment portfolio, the stock market was taking off. This was the period of the internet. Large investments were made, lots of money was made, and of course with a stock market you have a highly volatile system of investments because of the easy liquidity of capital. Quick money was made, quick money was lost. This culminated along with some other funny business known as risk loss transfer portfolios, which were sold as insurance contracts and were later deemed not to be insurance contracts because reinsurance was guaranteed. In other words, there was no true risk of transfer of risk. Again, took money off the reserve books into investments to the tune of about $500 million, and then when that was nullified, had to go back to reserves. And finally, you had something where the New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer had recently prosecuted a number of cases, indicted a number of companies on the reclassification of premiums outside of the workers' compensation category, which enabled some carriers to avoid paying their full share of the state-mandated fees. So this really resulted in a huge erosion of capital right at about the same time that all of the markets were experiencing some turmoil. In California in particular, and actually in Texas, sort of modeled this same sort of behavior pattern. We saw California deregulation also occurred at the same period of time. California is a funny animal, and it's because it's such a huge state. You know, it's about 20 to 25% of the national market, all concentrated in one state. When California deregulated, again, there was severe price competition. This prices went down. Carriers thought they had lots of money to play with because of the unicover, the stock market, etc. What happens in 2000? Everything collapses. Insurance premiums go up, employers cry foul because they're seeing their rates and premiums go up 20% at each renewal period. SCIF gets out of control. They go from an 18% market share in California to a 54% market share in California. They become the single largest writer of insurance in the entire nation for workers' compensation, even though they're writing a single market. Carriers, California goes from about 350 carriers down to about 120, and this had a nationally destabilizing effect because there was so much money concentrated in the California market. You have to remember, workers' compensation is not just workers' compensation primaries. You've got reinsurers. Reinsurers are underwritten by life insurance primarily. So you've got a lot of money that all of a sudden there's instability in the system. This concurs with the inflationary medical, the overutilization, and increase in benefit costs. So really, we had a national crisis. It was not just Texas. It was not just Florida. It was not just California. Everybody was going through the same turmoil. National issues that we can identify and expect to have problems with in the future. Medical inflation continues to be medical inflation. Immigration is going to have a very significant a very significant impact in the future, depending upon what happens with the immigration policy on a national basis. Again, this is a national issue, because workers' compensation seems to be predominantly, and rightfully so, focused on manual labor. Most of the manual labor seems to be predominated by immigrant labor. So that's going to have a profound effect, whatever the national policy ends up being on immigration, is going to have a profound effect on workers' compensation. Alcohol and drugs has always been a problem, and we've seen a number of attempts by various states to get more conservative on that, but as it goes up through the courts, and I think Arizona was the last state to really deal with the case with the Gramatico decision, you still have states trying to prohibit the implementation of workers' compensation benefits where alcohol or drugs are involved, but then the courts are saying no, there still has to be direct causation. So that has not changed yet. The aging boomer population. What are we going to do when dudes like me, you know, are on the job still at 65, 70, 75 years old? And by the way, I intend to work until I die. Not because I have to. I'm not even sure because I like to, but what the heck. I plan on doing it anyhow. That's just my intention. And then state fund competition. I think we've seen some issues come up with state fund state funds competing against the private carriers. This issue has really been a hotbed in Oregon, where the SAIF Corporation, which is the state fund of Oregon, was embroiled in a hot and bitter political, legal, and regulatory dispute with Liberty Mutual. Probably still is going on under the cover a little bit more. What are states doing now? What's going on? Well, medical networks is a hot topic, hot. States are looking at California and Texas to see what we're doing with our various medical network programs to see, A, how are they being implemented? B, is it going to save us any money? C, are injured workers going to receive the medical treatment they need in order to get back to work? Utilization review is another hot topic. We're going through growing pains in California right now over the whole utilization review program. And in fact, the California Department of, or Division of Workers' Compensation recently held some hearings on utilization review and is threatening to dramatically increase the penalties for wrongfully denied medical treatment under the guise of utilization review, where utilization review should not have actually even been implemented, where there really isn't any dispute as to what treatment protocol is to be allocated to the injured worker. Treatment and disability guidelines, big trend. You have the two major players, ODG and AACOM, out there. Some states are allowing a choice of treatment guidelines. Other states are saying you must follow this treatment guidelines. Other states are saying this is our preferred guideline, but if you have something better, go ahead and use it. Rehabilitation is on its way out, and there seems to be more of a trend towards incenting employers and employees to return to work earlier. In California, that incentive was put in place by two programs. One is an additur or a debitur to your permanent disability indemnity if you have 50 or more employees, and also a vocational school voucher system, which frankly is not very effective. It isn't being used. We're also seeing a declination in claim costs. Better safety, so lower frequency, lower utilization, and just a more efficient use of the claims dollar. How Texas is different. You know, this reminds me of a story. Big city California lawyer goes out to Texas to do a little hunting, do a little duck hunting, bags a duck. The duck goes flying over the property line to some farmer's land. So this old farmer drives up on his tractor and just as the big city lawyer was about to climb over the fence to go retrieve his duck, says, "Boy, what do you think you're doing there?" Big city lawyer says from California, says, "It's my duck. I just bagged a duck over here, flew over onto your property, and I intend on retrieving that duck." And the farmer says, "You're not going to retrieve no duck on my property." And the guy says, "Yes, I am. That's my duck." Says, "Well," the farmer says, "Well, listen, you know, we here in Texas, we do things a little bit differently. We settle small disputes like this with what we call the Texas three-kick rule." The lawyer was intrigued, and he says, "Well, what's the Texas three-kick rule?" The old man says, "Well, first one of us kicks the other three times, and the other kicks the other three times, and goes on so forth and so forth until one of them calls uncle and quits." Well, the lawyer was pretty strapping, pretty big guy. He says, "I can take on this old coot." So he says, "That sounds good to me." So cranky old farmer climbs down off of his tractor and says, "Okay, I'm going to go first." So he reaches out and kicks that lawyer right in the shin. Lawyer, he's grabbing his shin, he's hopping around on one leg. The farmer reaches out and kicks him in the other leg and knocks that lawyer down on the ground, and he's writhing on the floor of the ground in pain. And the farmer then kicks him one more time right in the side of the gut. And the lawyer is writhing in pain, spits a little bit of dirt out of his mouth, finally gets up and, "Okay, well, that's fine. Now it's my turn." Farmer says, "No, it ain't. I give up. Go get your duck." All right. So, unique things about the Texas system is, and I'm going to use a little Texas phrase here, y'all got a voluntary system, essentially, subscribers and non-subscribers. What's interesting about this is, and I'm not sure that this was the intent of the legislature or the intent of the present DWC administration, but it's a unique opportunity for the administration to engage in market competition, essentially. The non-subscriber, this is what I think is an opportunity for DWC to say, you know what, hey, we're more efficient. This is an opportunity for the entire Texan workers' compensation community to say, we're more efficient than a non-subscription system. We're more we provide better protection for the workers, better protection for the employer. We get things done quicker, sooner, faster, better, cheaper, etc. And so the mandate that I see coming from the administration is, you know what, and we're seeing this. We're seeing, you know, we've heard Rick say, you know what, things are happening faster. We're getting better treatment. We're moving along faster, and there's better responsiveness from the administration. And I think we're seeing that as a result of this sort of market competition. So let's go over a little bit medical networks, guidelines, and utilization review. I'm going to do a little comparison with California here, and hopefully I don't get anything wrong with the Texas system because I'm not a Texas expert. Heck, I don't even think I'm a California expert anymore, but I try. What's similar between the two systems? Both have very rigid notice requirements to the injured worker. Both systems require some pre-notification, some post-injury notification, posters up on the wall about the selection of a physician from the medical network, etc. Both systems put control of treatment within the treating physician, whoever the designated treating physician is. Both of them follow a managed care model. You can get pre-authorization for certain things. Other procedures don't require pre-authorization, but it's very much follows, you know, an HMO type of model, a managed care model. Both systems have geographic and specialization minimums, meaning your network has to cover a certain area and have a certain number of designated types of physicians in order to be certified. Both have the stated goal of providing effective care, and there's quality assurance rules and audits that are being set up and put into place to make sure that those managed care networks or healthcare networks do what they're supposed to do. And both are based on market-driven fee assumptions, meaning the selling point to the employer is, we're going to save you money. This thing's great. Anyhow, what are some of the primary differences between California and Texas? When I talked to Bert Solomons a couple of years ago about HV7 and the whole difference between California networks and Texas networks, and I said, Bert, it seems to me like you folks are just pretty much copying California. And he got very offended and said to me, nope, Californians micromanage everything and overregulate everything, and that's probably true compared to the Texas model. Obviously, the first point is, in California it's called a medical provider network. In Texas it's the workers' compensation healthcare network. I think the titles are a bit indicative of what the intent of the network systems are. California is more of a claims-centric type of system, very much driven by guidelines, utilization review, etc. The Texas model, however, appears to me to be a little bit more provider-centric, meaning each network can develop their own guidelines if they want to. They're self-policed a bit more, at least so far. In California, there was, of course, a mad rush to create networks. Now we have, I believe, about 1,200 networks that have been approved. One of the things about the California model, which probably overwhelmed DWC when they started this system, is that the law provides that if DWC does not approve or reject your network application within 60 days of receipt, it's automatically approved. I don't know how many of those 1,200 were automatically approved. They were overwhelmed with applications. And presently in Texas, we have, about 17, I think, approved networks. In California, eliminated, what the heck do I mean by eliminated injured worker choice outside of MPN? Once you're in the medical provider network, you have no choice over your treating physician except within that medical provider network. And Texas still has maintained the ADL, although we know that's set up for review. Again, California, market-driven fees. Each network owner or regulator, whatever you want to call them, negotiates independently. However, the basis is still the official medical fee schedule, which is Medicare plus, I believe, 15%. Presently in Texas, we don't have a fee schedule for MPNs, and so each network is free to negotiate fees with the physicians that are in that MPN. Here's some other quick differences. In California, there's no filing fee for a healthcare network or a medical provider network, as they call it. Texas is a $5,000 fee. Transfer of care in California is a complicated process. It can take up to 1 year, and there's multiple exceptions to transferring care from one physician to another. It's very difficult. In Texas, the process is much simpler. A change of treating physician, though, by the way, transfer of care, I meant from one network to another. It's very difficult. Unlimited employee choice after the first visit in California. Texas, you get one change and that's it. In dispute resolution, we have a complex system for dispute resolution of medical decisions in California. You have your appeal, then you have a second appeal, then a third appeal, and if you still don't like what that third appeal is, you get to go to an independent medical reviewer. The employer has no appeal, has no appellate rights within the MPN, within the medical network. In Texas, you appeal to the district court. The statistics so far in California, and this data actually is probably about 6 or 8 months old, and I don't have current data on it, but this was compiled by the California Workers' Compensation Institute, and what they found in preliminary network results are that 26.7% lower average total cost per indemnity claim. There was almost a 32% reduction in attorney involvement, and the care resulted in about 20.7% less indemnity claims, meaning people were getting back to work faster. Differences were associated with network affiliation, network plan design. There weren't always discounts involved. The provider experience was positive, and yes, there was lower utilization within the networks. So there was a lot of incentive that's pre-built within medical networks to return the injured worker to work faster, to provide medical treatment more efficaciously, and make, you know, and not have runaway medical care. Now, one thing that we are finding, however, in California is that there seems to be, or there is controversy over whether or not there's an access to care issue. The research that was presented by CWCI in December, and they did a detailed analysis with all sorts of data analytics concerning how many physicians were within specific geographic zones that were within a certain mileage of injured worker populations, showed that there was no issue as to access of care, and that in fact in some geographic zones access to care improved, meaning that there were more physicians per injured worker on a per capita basis. The data was based on the number of doctors in an MPN or a medical network geographic zone. Anecdotal evidence, however, seems to refute that. We hear a lot of stories from physicians saying that they don't want to be a part of a network and that they didn't know when they signed up to be a part of a healthcare practice that they were going to be a part of a workers' compensation network. A lot of physicians, anecdotally again, and there has been no study on this, have complained that they don't appreciate having to render care at substantially reduced fees with increased reporting requirements, that they were not ready or prepared to perform. The quality of the care has not yet been measured. We've seen better return to work results and lower indemnity, but that's not necessarily indicative of the quality of care. And then we've also need to distinguish access to the what kind of physicians you're actually getting. ACOM last month published a study that was performed. In fact, this is like really small type, so I'm going to have to read this carefully. But the focus was, they published a study that was performed in Louisiana. Louisiana has a statewide managed care network. And so these physicians went into the state and performed a study to see if what the differences are in a managed care network that used utilization review versus not using utilization review. And it was a very interesting study, and what they concluded was that utilization review in a managed care network system impeded progress, impeded the treatment of injured workers compared to a specialized medical network. A specialized medical network, meaning a network comprised of physicians who were trained to perform industrial medicine, who were trained as to the nuances of occupational medicine, reporting in workers' compensation issues, and understanding the return to work issues. And they said that if you threw utilization review into the mix like that, you actually experienced an increase in disability, an increase in indemnity, an increase in costs because of the delays resulting in treatment. So they advocated that it's not necessarily good to put utilization review into a system, but that it's more efficacious to ensure that your network is comprised of industrial physicians that understand workers' compensation. And as I mentioned before, in California, we're experiencing a little bit of this controversy. There is a dispute as to whether utilization review is in fact impeding the progress of injured workers, whether it's increasing costs and not getting the injured worker back to work as soon as possible. Okay. Immigration is, like I said, going to be a huge issue. It's a mixed bag for the employer. The reason is because the employer needs the protection of exclusive remedy in workers' compensation, but at the same time, the employer needs access to good economical labor. Not only is it politically hot to cover the issue of illegal aliens and immigration, but you've got a social and economical problem with whether or not you're going to cover injured illegal aliens or injured illegal immigrants. The problem is, obviously, exclusive remedy versus the labor. So how the nation deals with the immigration problem is going to have a significant impact on workers' compensation. Could be good, it could be bad. We don't know yet, and that's going to be a problem that comes up in the future. Alcohol and drugs, again, causation standards. What is the tolerance for the employer community to put up with alcohol or drugs, not necessarily in the workplace, but, you know, affecting job performance? I told you briefly about Arizona's problem with the Gramatico case. A very conservative state sought under two appellate decisions that had differing results to constrict access to workers' compensation benefits where drugs or alcohol were present in the blood but not necessarily involved in the industrial injury. The Supreme Court of Arizona said, no, there has to be causation. You have to show that alcohol or drugs caused the injury. That same result was experienced in South Dakota, West Virginia, Florida, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington. They've all dealt with that same problem over the last 2 years. They've all come up with the same basic result. The boomer population, you have the issue of the aging workforce. How are we going to make workplaces safer for an aging workforce? If I'm standing up all day doing my Walmart greeting, and am I going to be a greater risk to the employer because I have back problems from standing all day, or I get carpal tunnel from shaking my hand all the time. So that's an issue. And then the medical consequences, obviously, the older you are, the longer it takes to heal, so there's going to be an increase in medical treatment burden. And conversely, though, you would realistically think that there would be a decrease in indemnity because of the shorter lifespan, shorter working history. So, is this going to be a burden on a new generation of employers? Time will tell. Our actuaries will actually give us more important in all the data that we need. One thing that we really have to remember is that workers' compensation is a cyclical industry. We've already had a couple of presentations here where we saw the effects of events up to 1989, and then we have a new wave of reform post-2000. California experienced the same thing, Florida experienced the same thing, the nation experiences the same thing. Workers' compensation is a cyclical business. It's highlighted by this little story. An actuary and an underwriter were watching the 11 o'clock news, and there's a gentleman about ready to jump off of the fifth story floor to commit suicide. So the actuary says to the underwriter, "I'll bet you $50 he jumps." And the underwriter says, "Okay, you're on." So sure enough, the guy jumps off the fifth floor. Actuary says the underwriter, kind of ashamed, says, "You know, I've listen, I can't